1-800-Flowers.com is more than your birthday, anniversary, or just because gift-giving destination. We put our hearts into everything we do to help you celebrate all life's special occasions with friends and family. From our farmers and bakers, florists and makers, everything from 1-800-Flowers is made with love every step of the way, because we know that nothing is more important than delivering a smile. To learn more, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Spurs in full cry here.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name's Windy, and I'm joined by my sidekick and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Hello, Windy.
And our tactics guy, and someone who doesn't believe everything he sees on TV. It's Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
Hello, Windy.
First up, we need to announce the winner of the Pleaties shirt. So we worked with Pleaties, who very kindly sent us all lovely custom-made shirts from their website, pleaties.com, pleaties.com. Also look at them on Instagram for some shots of the shirts. The winner is Dan Mahoney. Thank you, Dan, for this gem of a review. He says, the Moussa Dembele of ...which I think he was saying Moussa Dembele of Spurs podcast as the title. Much like the big man, perfectly balanced, in-depth analysis without being dry, good-humoured chemistry without getting too blokey, all topped off with the ideal attitude towards Spurs, overwhelming cynicism with a healthy undercurrent of misplaced hope. You never answer my questions, but they are always rubbish, so I'll forgive you for that. The best Spurs podcast, without a doubt, standing up for Ndombele, good football, and Nathan's atrocious hair choices when no one else will. Great review. I mean, what can we say? That's a great review, isn't it?
That's us. There were some other good ones as well, but that one stood out for me.
It was close. There were some other excellent reviews. Thank you to everyone who reviewed our podcast. It's very much appreciated. So where do we start? Southampton, 5-2. Wow. We usually start with the team selection and our response to the team selection. Mm-hmm. So let's go with it. Bardi, what did you think? Ndombele was in, Alderweireld was out, Dele was out of the squad entirely.
Alderweireld being out concerned, neither Dele so I would like to start, but I was very happy Ndombele started as well. I thought he kind of deserved it after cameo against Everton, changing the game against Plovdiv, and it was great to see him start. And even though he struggled, I was very happy with the team formation. I can't complain about it given the players we had available.
How about you, Nathan? What did you think when you saw that team lineup?
Yeah, I mean, it's that sort of sense of like you get one thing you want, and in return you have to pay the price. It's like the curling of a monkey's paw, as you say. Please, please find a way to get Ndombele into this team, and the price is Dele suddenly goes from a starter game week one to rumored away, not starting for two matches, not taken abroad, maybe going to start in a cup game that may or may not actually happen. I guess you lean towards the positive there, and you say, well, at least we're seeing some Ndombele. I hope he has a good game.
Indeed. So the match starts. 2 minutes in, we see Son run through, break the offside trap on the left. Harry Kane scores a fantastic volleyed scissor volley, I suppose you'd call it.
Mm-hmm. Roundhouse kick, mate.
Yeah, it's ruled out through VAR. What do we think of the decision? It was inches, right?
Yeah, it's a minimal decision, but we kind of accept it now that it's going to be offside if slightly gone. I think it showed up a weakness in the team that we exploited later, and it gave me hope that we could get goals in this, and even if we fell behind, we could pull it back just by sheer persistence and chucking two world-class forwards at their back line.
So what happened then was Southampton proceeded to run us ragged for the rest of the half, basically.
Yeah.
They just cut through us with pretty much every attack, and we relied on Lloris making an absolutely unbelievable save, which I don't think has been spoken of enough, to be honest. The strong hand to get Shea Adams' shot over the bar was exceptional, really exceptional. I kind of think any other goalkeeper, and that's a goal. But what did you think of the reasons for that, Nathan? Why was Southampton having so much joy against us?
So we played the first half in something of a medium block, and they found Ings over the top several times. I think that we couldn't match their intensity at all. We weren't really contesting the ball in the field.
You sound like Jose Mourinho.
It was pretty weak. It was pretty poor. It's very clear that we wanted that ball over the top to Sun, and we did get it just before half time. Obviously, I think we wanted to see Ndombele on the ball in that 10 role, and we really struggled to find him. I think he struggled to create space for himself, but I think we really struggled to work the ball to him, regardless of his own efforts. And then defensively, just not in a great shape generally.
Interesting. So you saw him playing 10 row. I saw him playing on the left of a three-man midfield. I kind of thought that Hyoibier was playing to the right and Ndombele was playing to the left, but their natural tendencies were for Ndombele obviously to be a bit higher and Hyoibier to be a bit lower. But you saw it as a sort of 4-2-3-1 shape, did you?
I'm pretty confident with that read. Let me see if I can find a heat map or something to have a look through myself.
I felt the same. I thought Ndombele was quite clearly playing central. I think a lot of our problems come with our inability to defend the second ball on a set piece. So that Shea Adams chance came from us failing to clear the ball and then pick up on the second ball. The Gineppo strike where he hit the post, once again us failing to deal with set pieces properly. I think it's a major issue that we're facing, and the goal against Everton was from a set piece, and I have never seen the goal that we conceded away in the Europa League, but I've heard that's from a set piece as well. So I think there's something going wrong there which needs addressing, because we're giving up too many kind of high quality chance set pieces.
Yeah, I mean, what was interesting to me was that Southampton were having lots of joy with the interplay of their strikers. Shea Adams was dropping off and filling the hole and holding the ball up and finding Danny Ings, which is ultimately exactly what we did in the second half.
Sure, yeah.
But they were doing it, I guess, a bit closer to our goal because we were playing a lower block than Southampton were, which in some senses meant we were able to defend the situations better, but in other senses it meant they were getting shots away, often from long range, but they were getting shots away. And they did look really good. They looked really effective. They were pressing us well. They looked dominant in midfield. Their fullbacks were bombing on, and Walker Peters got the assist for the Ings goal, and I thought him and Bertrand were both a threat in the first half and looked good. However, that was a downfall in the second half, right?
I just want to highlight one thing that I think Eric Dyer, I don't think he can start for us anymore, because that was a very simple pass. It wasn't like Carl Walker Peters picked up and curled it around the line or Danny Ings did anything more complicated than just run straight forward. Dyer totally lost the flight of the ball. Totally lost where Ings was. Davinson comes hairing over to try and rescue the situation, but Ings is just too smart and clever for those two, and he catches Lloris out completely. And it's just carbon copy of the goal we conceded there last year, except that time it was Alderweireld who got done by Ings. Maybe that was perhaps the reason behind dropping Toby for this game, but I just think it's a very simple pass, and I just think Dyer is looking like it takes too long to get his kind of feet in position and move where he needs to move. And also I thought his distribution out of the back was awful. His distribution, Winks' distribution, and it's no surprise that Ndombele was starved. We were unable to get him the ball because there was just nothing coming out of the back line.
Well, if you think that Dyer should be out of the team, I've got bad news about where he sits in Mourinho's rankings of centre-backs. I think he's probably considered first choice. I think he's probably considered the only centre-back who can play on the left at the moment. So I don't think you're going to see Eric Dyer out of that defence anytime soon, I'm afraid.
I certainly agree with Bardi that the centre-backs were severely lacking for Spurs in that first half, and we hugely missed Alderweireld.
There was a bit where, sorry to interrupt, that Dyer and Sanchez both challenged for an aerial against Danny Ings at the same time and both lost out, and I thought that's probably not great.
Yeah, I remember that exact moment too. I mean, let's be honest, they weren't helped by the fact that the man playing as our deepest line midfielder is Harry Winks, who, as we said many times, has qualities, has abilities, is very good at keeping the ball, but in this kind of system he's quite unsuited to playing as the six, and I thought it really showed in the first half. And you know, my thoughts were, why not just switch Hyoibier and Winks? Because you're getting a much more solid defensive player in Hyoibier sitting then. And Winks can do this shuttling and scuttling, if that's even needed, to be honest. What he did do was, at half-time, he took off Ndombele, which we later found out was a pre-agreed decision, which actually I think makes a hell of a lot of sense because he's fresh back and I really like that decision. I think it's fine. At the time, I was furious, gutted, everything, all the bad emotions. Bardi, what was your response to Ndombele coming off?
Well, I was surprised because obviously we didn't know what that has been pre-agreed. But I mean, if you're going to take off Ndombele and replace him with Giovanni Lo Celso, it's okay. You know, I'm not getting too upset. If you're taking him off and replacing him with Lucas Moura, then it's a problem. But it made sense. He has started finally playing minutes, and we did have a really congested fixture list, so it made sense. He was on. He had a crucial impact on the goal. He had done something which was noteworthy, which is great. And yeah, Lo Celso added something extra to us. He doesn't have the same skill set, but he's also a great player. So it wasn't like a huge dent to our overall talent.
Nathan, what did you think at halftime? What were your kind of overriding thoughts?
Yeah, no, I was kind of in a not dissimilar kind of mentality, you know, frustrated. It makes sense as a prepared thing. I guess it's just like the whole thing with Ndombele last season, and it's easy to simplify and just say, oh, he was bad. But the thing last season was that again and again and again, he would come onto the pitch at 60 minutes and greatly improve our game. Mm-hmm. And after doing that two or three times in a row, he'd get a start and you'd be excited. And then he'd start the game and he'd play like shit. And then he'd be subbed off at half time and you go, well, I can't really argue with that substitution, he was terrible, I guess he can only play 30 minutes, whatever. So when he has a first half, okay, he was quiet, he didn't hustle to get onto the ball very well, he probably could have done more defensively, but he had that real moment of brilliance, you think, oh good, things are finally starting to come together for Ndombele, and he gets subbed off. That's going to cause frustration. But I think if we accept the story that it was a planned move, it makes more sense in terms of fitness and rotation, huge number of games, he's got a strapping around his knee going on, all of that kind of stuff. And I thought that Lo Celso played well in that sort of 10 / advanced member of a three kind of situation as well.
So what we said on that then, what does the heat maps tell you?
Kind of inconclusive, really. It's sort of that, it's a bit of a midway point between a 3 and a 4-2-3-1, which I guess is why we're both seeing it two different ways.
I think that's probably it could be situational, it could be by design, I don't know, it's difficult to tell. So obviously Lo Celso comes on and almost instantly makes everyone who complained of a substitution look foolish, because he has an amazing bit of play where he picks up the ball, he holds a man off, he finds Harry Kane through the lines, and Harry Kane plays Son in and he scores his second. Is that was the goal where he overhits the pass a bit? Or was that the first one? No, the second one was a really good pass. Yeah, so it's the first goal where he overhit the pass at all.
I'm afraid there were simply too many occasions where Kane assisted Son to be able to differentiate.
Right. I know, it did feel like that. I mean, we'll come on to that partnership because, my word. But when we scored our second goal and then suddenly the floodgates seemed to open and every time we went forward we seemed like scoring, what were your overriding thoughts, buddy? Were you thinking, you know, I fully expected this to happen at some point, or were you shocked by what was going on?
No, of course not. You're not going to expect that we're going to turn it that well, that we're going to turn the game that much. I expected us to get chances. Southampton were giving us opportunities, but no, I didn't expect Jose to pull off a master plan quite like that. Long live Jose. What a man. What a manager.
So basically what he did was he asked Kane to drop into the 10 area and play balls in behind the Southampton defence, knowing that their fullbacks were pushed up in that system. And to me, it really reminded me of how we played against Liverpool under Pochettino, where we frequently saw Klopp use Salah and Mane to do exactly the same thing in behind our fullbacks. I remember Ben Davis having an absolute nightmare in one game in particular. It felt familiar. It felt like that. It felt like we'd done they were outstanding, Southampton, in the first half with their pressing. We waited for the press to wear off a little. We took hold of the game and then we started piercing them over and over and over again. Death by a thousand cuts. Buddy, you've got your hand up. Are you going to sing Jose Mourinho's praises again? Because I don't think I can bear it.
No, but I mean, withdrawing the main... If you've got a front three, withdrawing the main guy, getting him rolled deep like Firmino, and then you've got the two strikers running either side of him, perhaps we're seeing what we're going to play when Bale comes in. Because it's incredible we managed to do that with a front three that was essentially a front two because Lucas was just non-existent. But you saw when Lamella Lamela came on, and I don't rate Lamela as a kind of very good attacking player, but even Lamela, Son and Kane looked incredible. Now replace Lamela with a better player like Bale, and then all of a sudden you've got a front three that can play as a three or play as a two, and it's quite flexible. So I don't think this is something that Mourinho has planned or something he's thought about. I think it's just something he's just happened upon, because we know that Kane is more than able to play that number 10 role. But I don't know if long term if Kane will be happy with Son collecting loads of goals and him having to scrape around for one or two here and there, because Kane, he wants those goals, he wants those stats, you know.
I feel like Kane started enjoying things even more once they made their change. From memory, they took off Romeo and put on Smallbone.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And so that meant naturally they were playing with a more forward focused midfield, and Kane was finding more and more space. So it was kind of the opposite move to what Hasenhüttl perhaps should have done in hindsight, and we profited over and over again from that. Son and Kane are just ridiculous. So they've combined for more Premier League goals than any other combination, any other duo, since Son arrived in England in August 2015. 24 goals. Absurd, but they're both elite players and they play close to each other. So I guess it's not that surprising. Their partnership is obscene, though. Nathan, why are they so good together?
It's all there. You know, two very good players consistently playing alongside each other. They're gonna notch up those circumstances to create for each other, and they're gonna develop a certain telepathy. You have, like, you know, the winger who can also make diagonal runs inside and score. You have the big number nine who can also drop off and be a number 10, and there's some really good sort of archetypal coming together there, where they can take in turns to play the supportive role to one another. But I think that if you match any good player with Harry Kane, or even any good player with Son, you're gonna start to see results. You know, before it was Kane and Son, it was Kane and Dele, and that was a huge thing for a long time, and I think that they had probably a higher rate of return over a shorter period. You know, think about the 15-16 and then 16-17 season, that was something, a huge combination going on there. Be interesting to see what the Kane-Bale partnership might look like in the near future.
If you look at that top five partnership from August 2015, Kane and Dele and Kane and Eriksen are in there as well, so you could see that there's a common factor, a common thread, and that is Kane. That's just how good he is.
So speaking of how good he is, I feel like it would be remiss to move on without talking about that one particular pass that he played from out the right flank, where he's facing the touchline. I don't know if he has a look. I need to watch it again. I'm not sure if he has a look to see where Son is. But what he does is, I mean, I don't think there are many players in the Premier League that could play that pass. I don't. Maybe none. Maybe no other players in the Premier League can play the pass that Kane plays so perfectly. He is facing the touchline, not far from the touchline, and he manages to swivel and get enough power, curl, perfect weight on the pass to land it into Son's path. It is absolutely unbelievable. It's the kind of pass that I could just watch over and over again, and kind of just summed up his game for me. He was immaculate, and Son, you know, scored four goals, but Kane was our main man in that match. He was a difference.
He has done that pass before. He did that exact same pass. Maybe it was to Son or Dele against Bournemouth when we were playing at Wembley. I'm pretty sure there's a carbon copy goal exactly the same as that.
Similar one for Son as well against Liverpool at Wembley. Yeah. I, for one, am looking forward to the fifth season in a row of articles about has Harry Kane reinvented himself as a number 10 instead of a number 9.
Oh my God.
You know they're coming once every year, like clockwork, mate.
You're so right. And before we move on, Nick Gilbert, we've kind of done this to an extent, but I think it's worth going a bit deeper. Nick Gilbert says, I know you'll be analysing Ndombele's good attacking work in the first half and his vital role in the first goal, but can you please analyse his defensive work as well? It looked to me like Southampton's threat was greatly reduced without him on the pitch, albeit maybe they gave up. Was there a defensive improvement in midfield, and is that backed up by the stats? What I'm asking is, did we get better because he wasn't putting his weight defensively? Nathan, any thoughts?
I don't think it's unfair to suggest that he was sort of low effort, low energy, not doing a huge amount of defensive work, certainly not doing pressing work, although we didn't press as a team really or at all in the first half, so, or throughout actually. So like it's I'm not saying that Ndombele was good defensively, but there was a significant defensive change between the two halves, which is that we sat deeper in the second half, which gave give Southampton so much less room in behind for Ings to work with, less time on the ball to pick out passes from sort of a third of the pitch away. And then they became more and more fragile on the counter as they tried to push on and force it harder and then got turned again and again. So Ndombele wasn't good defensively, but it's I don't think there's much of a direct relationship between him going off and us as a team getting much better defensively in the second half. I think it's more of a tactical thing than a personnel thing.
Mm-hmm. What did you think, Bardi?
Yeah, I think flattening our back four as well, getting rid of the wonky and making Doherty into more of a kind of traditional right back help. There was one moment with Ndombele in the first half where he spun away from a tackle, moved the ball, and he hit a beautiful pass out to the left back and Ben Davies. And I just had visions of if it was Reguilón picking up that ball and just going with it. Instead, Ben Davies checked back and passed it back to Davinson. So I think there's more to come with Ndombele as we build the team around him and put players alongside him who are also good footballers.
I'm going to disagree again on our shape. I didn't think we played lopsided fullbacks in this match. I thought we went with the traditional back option, which led to me believing that we're preparing the ground for our new boy.
Yeah.
Which is good. You know, I can't argue with the logic.
One-800-Flowers.com is more than your birthday, anniversary, or just because gift-giving destination. We put our hearts into everything we do to help you celebrate all life's special occasions with friends and family. From our farmers and bakers, florists and makers, everything from 1-800-Flowers is made with love every step of the way, because we know that nothing is more important than delivering a smile. To learn more, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Okay, I guess we will move on and talk about Plovdiv. This might not take that long. I mean, the two most notable things about the match probably were the fireworks and the poor quality broadcast. This was a Banter FC Europa League classic. We were awful. We were absolutely awful for the majority of the game. We went 1-0 down, and then with a few minutes to go, there's a handball on the line. A player gets a second yellow for scuffing the penalty spot. Suddenly we're playing nine men and we look amazing. But there is one thing that is worth talking about, which is Ndombele kind of transforming our performance. Bardi, did you catch this one, or did your stream go down as well?
After this match, I had to reset my computer from a previous restore point because of the dodgy websites I was watching the streams from. It completely killed my... immediately after that game, my processor and memory started running at 99% on everything and I couldn't do anything. So, it really destroyed my computer. But you're right, it was one of those banter games where you could just see us losing and would never live it down. But we turned it around. That was the worst football team I've ever seen, and I think I said to somebody, Ndombele will come on and just run through these guys like the farmers they are, because that's all they were. And I can't believe the shame that we conceded a goal to these guys. Yeah, it was awful. It was absolutely awful, and it did make me question. I was nearly Mourinho out during that match, but we got through. So, and now we're off to we've won a trip to Macedonia. It's great.
It is lovely, amazing weather. How results can change perceptions.
Yeah, it now goes down as a footnote, as a funny game. Oh, remember when we played Plovdiv instead of Jesus.
One of the worst games we've ever played.
Do you remember when Mourinho's career died against Plovdiv?
To play that badly and come away with one, the win, and two, most people having not seen any of it or much of it at all, is such an incredible, incredible sort of stroke of luck. I did find our tats. So this was like the day after the Bale and Reguilon news broke, and we immediately into this game played a 4-3-3. Played with two attacking fullbacks. Played Højbjerg as the deepest midfielder.
Yes.
Had him move out not left in possession to cover the space behind Ben Davies.
Yeah.
Something I've said before about Davies is like, it's not that he's not an attacking fullback. It's not that he's a defensive fullback. He's good in the final thirds. He's good in the defensive third. The problem is him having the athleticism to constantly be going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. So putting Højbjerg sort of behind him and letting him sit a little further up the pitch, I think works well there. Lo Celso looks good. No one else did until Ndombele came on, really. I have seen the goal that we conceded. I'm one of the lucky few who have managed to see the goal that we conceded. Really, really bad from Davinson, who just sort of is possessed by a satanic spirit temporarily and does some sort of weird aerial attempt several meters away from the ball as a Plovdiv forward is able to pick up a free header at a corner. Yeah, I don't know what else more there is to say about that game.
It was pretty ugly. It was pretty ugly. But we got the win. And we're through to the next qualifying round.
W in the bag.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So next up, we're going to talk about this email from Alex. I'm going to say it's Chincotta or Sincotta. Apologies, Alex, if I got your name wrong. He said, this is a question mainly for Windy, but I'd also like to hear the others' opinions. Do you feel like we're getting too big, and do you feel less connected with the club recently? He says, I saw Windy's tweet during the Saints match, and I couldn't help but agree. From the start of the season to most recently, I feel like this isn't the Tottenham I know, and this is my club. I'm going to read that again. From the start of the season to most recently, I feel like this isn't the Tottenham I know and is my club. And I think that's down to a lot of factors, such as the uncharacteristic spending of last year, the style of football we're watching, and the enormous presence of Jose. For some reasons, it all feels a bit unsettling. Perhaps it's also the reason why we're seeing the undoing of Poch's work right before our eyes. It just feels like we're changing in a big way. Would love to hear you guys' thoughts. So, full disclosure, I had... I've quite a strong reaction to the Southampton game. And I think I need to caveat that this is a very personal thing to me. And the only reason I'm mentioning this is because we had a direct question about it. And also I had a lot of tweets and DMs from people who were relating to my tweet about my current disconnect with this Spurs team. So currently I'm going through quite a difficult time personally with some family illness, and it's not great. I'm going to be honest. It's not a lovely time. And I've got a lot of pressure at work as well. And in the past, this is where Spurs have kind of really helped me out, and the escapism, distraction, being able to enjoy Spurs with friends and family has been lovely. It's been just a tonic. And when I feel like I need Spurs most, they're not delivering for me at the moment. And on reflection, I think there are a few different reasons for that. So one of those things would be the stadium. And I appreciate that the stadium was a hugely exciting thing for everyone. And I was excited too about going to the new stadium. But I really miss the old White Hart Lane. Like, all of my childhood memories of going to Spurs are associated with that place. I love it. I loved it dearly. And the new stadium brings with it a new form of football, a new way of experiencing football that's not in line with my values. And that's something. So the other thing is COVID and the kind of behind closed doors matches and not having fans there. It doesn't feel real. It feels somehow artificial. It feels like I'm watching a film of a football match, which leads me onto a documentary, which left me feeling, I think Bardi summed it up absolutely beautifully in our last episode about it. It wasn't my Tottenham that I was watching on the screen. And whether that was the Amazoned up version of Spurs or whether that is really Spurs, I didn't like what I saw, and it made me feel a bit sad about my beloved club. And then finally, our manager. And, you know, everyone who's listening knows that I struggle with Jose Mourinho. I've not made any secret of that. I struggle with him even more after watching the documentary. I struggle with him even more after what's happening with Dele now. That's just, I find it upsetting. I struggled with him interrupting Son's interview to say that Kane was man of the match.
Yeah.
And I struggled with the most recent comments about, you know, Kane playing every game. But basically, again, his values don't align with mine. We've come through this period where we've had this amazing manager in Pochettino who I felt the most incredible connection to and made me feel this connection to my team. And moving on from that to such an extreme opposite version has really impacted on the way I connect with Spurs. And I'm having a bit of a rough time with it. The thing I feel like I need to do to get beyond it is to start and this sounds strange from someone who's interested in this, but to start just looking at things coldly in a kind of a cold analytical way and not engaging with feelings too much until I get more used to what I'm experiencing. I will say that I'm feeling a hell of a lot better the last couple, like I felt really bad on Sunday that Spurs, I felt so disengaged from Spurs. I felt a lot better on Monday. Today, Tuesday, I've watched the match of the day and I actually enjoyed the goals, which I didn't do on Sunday. Also, my favorite band released their new album this afternoon. Fleet Foxes' album was streamed and then released, and I had a lovely, lovely time listening to that, which really helps. But there we go. That's how I'm feeling. Anybody, I mean, I imagine you're feeling quite differently to me, judging by our previous conversations and the fact that you are a certified trophy nonce. tell me what you're experiencing.
I think I completely agree with how you're feeling. I think you need to realign things. Is when you look to Tottenham or any other football club, unless you're perhaps your Juventus or Barcelona or something like that, when you look to Tottenham to kind of dig you out of a hole, they're never going to do that because it's Tottenham Hotspur and we don't win all the time. So I think your first thought is looking to Tottenham to cheer you up, because they don't do that for a lot of us. But I do see why you can feel disenfranchised with the club. I do as well. That version of Amazon, what Tottenham showed us, what Amazon showed us about Tottenham, I now disregard that. That's not my football club. That is something that they put out there, and something that people have feel. There are people who've had the opposite connection. They've seen that, and now all of a sudden they feel tied to Tottenham, which is a kind of what they wanted. Pochettino moving on is sad. Pochettino not achieving what he should have achieved is sad. Jose Mourinho coming in is sad, because obviously, like you guys, I would have preferred someone who a Hasenthal or Nagelsmann or anybody, someone who had someone who played the way that I like to see football being played. But for as long as Jose's at the club, I will continue to support Tottenham. I'll continue to enjoy Tottenham winning. I just perhaps won't take them, I don't know, I just won't take it as serious. But then I can't, because I still love Tottenham Hotspur, and my undying love for Tottenham Hotspur unfortunately kills my opinion of whoever's manager, that I will continue to support this club until Jose pushes me off the edge, and he nearly did against Plovdiv. But until he pushes me off the edge, I will continue to be happy when he manages to churn out results. And scoring 5 goals away at Southampton, regardless of a lack of a plan of football that I enjoy, it's still something that I can take pleasure from, and I will continue to take pleasure from us scoring lots and lots of goals.
I think you're quite right to point out that lots of people will have been switched on to the club by the documentary, and lots of people really did enjoy what they saw and enjoyed Jose being centre stage and, you know, his charismatic self. That's definitely, and that's completely legitimate. I think this is a very personal thing, and it's my issue. It's not Spurs necessarily. It's me. Nathan, how about you? How are you feeling about things?
I find the comments about our expenditure from Alex really interesting. I remember going through a thing years and years ago with Spurs, where like, yeah, I definitely, and I guess I'm not alone. Certainly at the time, I definitely took a lot of pride about us being this sort of low spending underdogs fighting our way up, not being one of these, you know, billionaire, trillionaire funded outfits. And then, like I said, I think we bought Clint Dempsey. I don't know why that was like a trigger point for me, but it was the idea of like buying like a name from another Premier League club or something. And I did feel a sort of a strange sort of that was an alienation there. That wasn't us. That wasn't right. We should be buying obscure 21-year-olds from League One or whatever, and doing things that way. But like, I don't know. It came around. We still, you know, eventually we'll have another summer where we just don't buy anyone again, and we make a profit for our owner every year. So like, I don't know. I do actually weirdly get that. I think that's just a small phase you go through. But I think to have that at the same time as getting the sense of alienation that yes, I'm definitely getting from having Jose Mourinho at a club, I think that he is at odds with the principles that, at least within myself, I have injected into our club. So I get it. I just, it comes around eventually, you know, and it's okay. Like, you're not like a traitor if you take a small step back from the club for a while, if you're a little more casual with things for a couple of years, because it comes around. The club isn't over because Mourinho is there. You can be frustrated, you can be annoyed, you can feel a little distant. You have other hobbies and things to pursue, and he won't be here forever, and we won't have other things you dislike about us going on forever. These things, they come back.
I think Windy, you should just take the joy in the things that are there to take the joy from. You can still take plenty of pleasure from Harry Kane. There's still so much to love about Son. There's some really exciting players, man, like Lo Celso. He's young, he's exciting, he's Argentinian. You've got Ndombele, young, French, exciting. Reguilón, we've got Gareth Bale back. There's so many good things about the club. I wouldn't let a middle-aged man who tries to steal the show at every party take that away from you. He's that guy in the office. You go to a Christmas party and he tries to like hog the dance floor and tell all the big banter jokes by the bar. Just ignore him and enjoy your colleagues at Tottenham Hotspur who were there to make your life nice. There's a lot of good things to be excited about, so just try and ignore him. You can easily ignore Jose, even though we have to talk about him a couple of times a week and do loads of really, really good Patreon content about him. But there's still nice things to enjoy.
So I think a lot of people felt what I'm feeling now when Tim Sherwood was manager.
Yeah.
I think people really went through it then. And the reason I didn't was because he was playing some of the youth players, which I'd really enjoyed seeing play the previous 2 years. Like Nabil Bentaleb, who I was really excited about, was suddenly like a mainstay in the team. So I was like, wow, this is incredible. I've got this connection with the team. And everyone else is thinking, I feel completely disenfranchised by this dickhead Tim Sherwood, who's a caretaker and is making us look stupid. It's funny, isn't it, how everyone just appreciates things in slightly different ways and experiences things in slightly different ways. Anyway, I mean, I'd be really interested to hear from our listeners how they're feeling, whether they are switched off or switched on by what's happening at the club, whether they just want to get a trophy and believe that Jose Mourinho could be the man to deliver that, or whether they're, like me, experiencing a sort of disengagement. To let us know, email us podcast@theextrainch.co.uk or Twitter @theextrainch. It'd be great to hear from you.
I think probably a majority of fans absolutely do just want a trophy by any means, and for that reason they're happy with Jose Mourinho. And I think probably your real alienation comes not so much from the club and the actions of the club, but your disagreement with those fans. But I just think that you both have a completely valid and reasonable interpretation of your fanhood and the values and the football that you like to see, and that, you know, you can disagree on how you want your football club to approach the world of football, and it's fine, and you're both still real legit football fans. This ever ongoing that certain people aren't real fans, or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
The only person you need to persuade is yourself, and it's very easy. You know how many games you watch, you know how much you've sung, and all of the rest. You're doing fine.
So to jump from one quite kind of deep and meaningful topic straight into another, we got this email, which I thought was a fantastic email, and it chimed with me, and you'll see why when I read it. It's quite long, but I'm going to read it verbatim because I think it's worth that. It's from OJD. He says, "May I please ask a couple more serious questions than usual for the podcast on something I felt after the Amazon documentary? I know football is viewed as a different industry with special dispensation for behaviour, brackets, we don't want footballers charged with assault for tackling, for example, close brackets, but how far should we allow this? I'm specifically referring to the use of language by the coaching staff. In a normal office environment, you simply can't talk in terms of having balls, being cunts, etc, etc, yet it's all over the Amazon documentary. The language is very old school masculine, and whilst not for a second am I accusing Jose and his staff of being sexist or homophobic, brackets, I genuinely don't think he holds such views, quite the opposite, close brackets, the language has a sexist and homophobic undertone to it. Historically, language such as being a real man, etc., has had other implied meanings. In modern football, with the drive for a more inclusive environment for the LGBTQ plus community and a greater focus on mental health, well-being and management of addiction, is there a risk that players don't want to hear this sort of language anymore? Perhaps this is why Jose has struggled with some players in the modern game. Perhaps I'm being a snowflake and making more out of it than it is, brackets, I'm sure Daesh, Big Sam, and even Pep and Klopp use such language too, close brackets, but it just struck me that Levy is generally such a straight-shooting businessman living in the modern business world, and I question whether it's a good look for Spurs with 2020 sponsors, business partners, etc. to have a manager speaking in such a manner. Brand association is a big thing these days, and many view the C word as being highly sexist and even homophobic. On a wider but related point, read the Amazon documentary, have you been surprised by the lack of applied psychology within the club? Huge medical department facility, but I didn't see much at all relating to mental health management. Brackets, seems the medical doctors were given the responsibility of covering that during COVID, close brackets, and sports psychology, etc. You alluded to it in one podcast, I remember. If the problem is mentality, then just get psychologists involved. But I found the lack of sports psychology, a club counsellor, mental health coverage, etc. very surprising for such a club that likes to present itself as ultra professional in a modern football world. Thank you, OGD, for a brilliant email. It's really thought-provoking for me. I'm intrigued to hear Nathan and Barty's thoughts. I'll touch on that last point myself very briefly first, if that's okay, in that I feel we're missing a trick here with the psychology element. You know, we have so many different roles at the football club. We have nutritionists, we have physios, we have doctors. Why do we not have a psychologist that works permanently with the first team squad and is in the dressing room as a hype man before the game, saying all the right things to get them in the mood? I mean, maybe that does happen and we just didn't see it, but it certainly didn't seem to me that there was a psychologist there. So we were instead relying on Jose Mourinho's sort of A-level psychology techniques in team talks. That seems like a fairly obvious innovation that would be really helpful. But Nathan and Bardi, I mean, who wants to go first? There's a lot to tackle there. Go on, Nath.
I know that you've struggled with the constant reference to balls, etc., and you observed as much during our watch long episodes. I get it. I understand how these sort of focuses on masculinity can be derisive. How there's this sort of air of sexism about it, to say that, to conflate masculinity with goodness, with quality, is to dismiss the values that you might wrongly or rightly more typically associate with women, and all of that kind of stuff. I completely get it. It's just not something that bothers me very much, which doesn't mean that it shouldn't be there, that I'm sort of the arbiter of moral values or anything like that. I just I don't think it bothers the players. I very much doubt there are very many players who are bothered by it. I don't see it as immoral, I guess, is what I'm trying to get at. And these kind of things, like, this is true of the Y word of our club as well. These kind of things, they take a long time, you know. I hope that in 10, 20, 30 years, you know, it'll be considered weird and wrong and odd and cringy to mention balls at a football club. I hope that that's true, that we as a club can move on from reappropriating the word yids, which I think absolutely we did for the correct reasons. And we probably still need today as a protection, as a shield against the abuse received of the fan club. But eventually, these two things, I didn't mean to open up a huge discussion about that word, are things that we want to move on from. I just think it's something that we probably have to be a lot more patient with. I also think that it's interesting to then move on from that to then talk about psychology, because probably, if you have a psychologist in the club, well, firstly, I think players and people have to manually seek it out themselves. You can't allocate someone, here is your allotted, we've decided you're going to see a mental health practitioner, here's your allotted hour, go and talk to them, because I don't think people will open up in that circumstance. I think they have to request it, which means it's more about a culture at large in terms of being more positive about that kind of stuff. But also, I think that, like, if Mourinho is talking about balls and then you go and see the mental health practitioner, they will talk about how, like, you don't need to view masculinity in that way, and that can be quite toxic, and then there's a confused message coming from the club from two different people. I don't know.
Yeah, I think a lot of what Nathan says makes a lot of sense, especially the psychology thing, but you can almost see that Mourinho's doing his own self-hack psychology when he's talking about resilience. These are things that our players should have, but like Nathan says, you can't force this upon a player, otherwise you end up in a situation like in 98 where Hoddle was forcing players to go and speak to Eileen Drury, and you have players like Graham, like Ray Parlour, who just completely unable to kind of do this thing, and all it does is end up breaking the confidence of the players, and it ends up being a stick to beat the manager with. I think players should do it. They should definitely go and speak to a psychologist and improve their game. I think Kane is probably someone that you can look to in that confidence that he has in himself. There was the, when he missed the penalty against Liverpool, he had the ability to pick up the ball again and go again and score from that. But in terms of the language, I agree once again with Nathan that football just seems to be 20 years behind the rest of society, and things that which are now unacceptable in football were unacceptable in real life years ago. I myself go to a game and sometimes I swear too much, and I say things out loud which I would never walk down the street if I dropped my kind of oat milk latte, dropped it and screamed swear words. Just wouldn't do it. But at a football match you get swept up, and it's not correct. It shouldn't happen. I think eventually some of the language will be toned down, because it has to be. It is outdated. It just takes time. Football's miles behind it, man. We're still, how can there be no openly gay players in the Premier League? It's just, It's so far behind the rest of society that in 30 years' time, it will change. Is that good enough? No, it's probably not good enough. Something should be done beforehand. But it's as you encounter every day on Twitter, it's a funny world out there with football fans. And it's going to take a long, long time. It's going to take the next generation to push this older generation into the sea before things change.
Really interesting. From both of you, I really appreciate both your viewpoints there. I think the bit that I'm intrigued by is whether the players care. I'd love to know. I'd love to be a fly on the wall and overhear what they're really thinking about the way they're spoken to by coaches. Because I don't know, from what I know of Gen Z, and I know some of these players are a little older than that, but Gen Z really do care about these kind of values. They're known for being, God, for want of a better term, and I know this is shorthand, but woke. And I hate that, so I shouldn't use that word. It's awful. It's not appropriate. It came from something completely different. But players are awake to all of the isms, and some of them which are implied by the language used by our coaching staff are problematic. And I agree with the point OJD made, that Jose is not homophobic or misogynist just because he uses some of these words. He might be, but I don't think the use of these words is evidence of that. But it's proper, like, it's old-fashioned. It's really old-fashioned beyond anything else. That's the bit that I can't move beyond. It's kind of how I imagine, you know, Sam Allardyce to speak on the training ground, or Neil Warnock or Tony Pulis. Not this elite manager who's metropolitan. He's managed at the biggest countries in Europe, and I don't know, it just seems at odds with that. But that's like Barney says, that's football. Football is so far behind everything. But I think that made a really interesting talking point, and thank you OGD for opening up in the way you did. It was really, really thoughtful and thought provoking. We've got loads of questions to answer, but we're going to do that for our ex-subs. So a little reminder, we've launched the Patreon. If you fancy joining our Patreon, you can do that at patreon.com/theextrainch. We are releasing lots of content on there, video content, podcasts, a few blogs. Bardi's started work on the newsletter, and my God, does it look awesome. Very sexy newsletter. I'm loving it already. And we've got the Fantasy Premier League. We've got the Discord channels where you can ask questions for the pod and have a natter with like-minded fans. It's good fun. It's going well. Are you enjoying the Discord channel chat, Nathan?
Yeah, good little community building there. Interesting little subculture developing in our Discord channel right now. I like that. Definitely. You don't like that they keep asking me questions and not you, but you know, you're getting
over it. It is constant. It's like, Nathan, what do you think about this? Nathan. And me and Bardi just sat there.
It is the Nathan turn.
Do you have any thoughts on Sorloth, Windy?
He's got a big head.
Yeah, he does have a massive head, to be fair.
It is the kind of Nathan show behind the paywall, which is Windy and I are there, but it's all Nathan. It's all Nathan and his videos. And he's getting all the praise. I got to fight my hardest to get a couple of likes, but Nathan just get 100 comments just for sitting in front of a green screen and playing some videos.
Begrudgingly, I accept that he is deserving of all of it.
Totally.
Cool. That's the end of the episode.
You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Bardi for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork.
Thanks to David Lindmer for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter at Davey Shambles and his SoundCloud, The Lindmer. Do check him out, he's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.
One-800-Flowers.com is more than your birthday, anniversary, or just because gift-giving destination. We put our hearts into everything we do to help you celebrate all life's special occasions with friends and family. From our farmers and bakers, florists and makers, everything from 1-800-Flowers is made with love every step of the way, because we know that nothing is more important than delivering a smile. To learn more, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.